So we're not going to leave the patriarchs forever, but probably a few messages from a different kinds of aspects is my plan. So we're going to start off with a little children's class. So if the children want to come and sit over here beside Milo and Mary Sue, and hopefully there's enough space for them all. Looks like there probably will be. So we're going to be talking this morning about the light of the world. And you see up here on the board, there's verses. They're from Matthew 5, and it says, "Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven." And so I thought I would tell you all a story about a time when it got really dark at my house. So have you all ever had it get really dark at your house? Yes, Grayson. When the electricity went out. Yeah, it gets dark then, doesn't it? So there was one time when I was living in Indiana when my weather radio went off. So my wife got me a Christmas present one year. I think it was a Christmas present. It was either Christmas or birthday. And it was an alarm clock, and it had built-in weather radio. Does anybody know what a weather radio is? No. Yes, Grayson. Does it tell the news? Well, it only tells news about the weather. Yeah, that's right. So if there's a big thunderstorm coming or there's a tornado watch somewhere thereabouts, then it will tell you and it will go off and it will wake you from sleep if you are sleeping. And if there's flash floods anywhere nearby, we lived on a hill. We didn't have to worry about flash floods. Some of that I wished I didn't have bothered me. It would go off regularly all through the night, even if there wasn't anything big coming. It just was warning me. So anyway, one night, my alarm clock went off and said, it was right around 12:40 in the morning, just early in the morning, and it said, tornado warning. So tornado warning is not a good thing, is it? What do you all do when there's a tornado warning? Yes, Grayson. You go to your basement. I don't have a basement, so I just have to sit in my bathtub with a bicycle helmet on. I'm just kidding. I don't do that. I just hope that it goes someplace else. So I got up and I thought to myself, is this really a big deal or is it not a big deal? And I thought to myself, you know, probably the best thing would be to wake everybody up and we'll all go down to our basement, because we did have a basement when we lived in Indiana. And we went down into the basement and we sat there and the wind was howling. It was making a lot of noise. And I thought, this is the kind of weather that would bring a tornado. But it didn't. I gave that part of the story away. But the lights went out. And then from upstairs, we heard a thump. And the lights were out, and there was a thump upstairs. So you know what I did? Yes, Grayson. Went upstairs. Went to investigate, right? I sent Elaine upstairs to investigate. I'm just kidding. I didn't do that. Well, I had a light with me, a flashlight. That was a fortunate thing, wasn't it? Because it would have been pretty scary to go upstairs without a light. So I took my light and I turned it on and I went up the stairs. And I went out the door. It was raining then. And I went out on my deck and I saw, what do you think? Yes, Grayson. A tree. No, it wasn't a tree. Yes, Victoria. Was it a tornado? No, it wasn't a tornado. Yes, Elise. A tree falling down. No, it wasn't that either. It was a snake. A big old snake got taken by the storm and blown up onto our deck. So you know what I did? Yes, Grayson. Killed it. Okay. Elise? Killed it. Okay. No, I left Mr. Snake alone and I went back inside. Because that's what you do when there's a snake on your deck at midnight. And he found his way home, I'm sure. So he wasn't there in the morning when I checked. So the important thing about this story isn't the snake. It's the fact that when the lights go out, I had a light. So I have something in my bag over here. Y'all probably thought I brought a sandwich along. So you can look at this, Elise, and then give it to Victoria, and she'll pass it on, okay? Do you all know what that is? What do you think it is? It's an old kind of candle. It's a lamp. So in that little hole, you would put olive oil, and then that's a wick that's coming out of there, and you would light that. Do you think it would give a whole lot of light? Probably not very much. No, nothing like even one electric light bulb. But that's what they used in Jesus' day. Why do you think they didn't use electric light bulbs in Jesus' day? Yes, Victoria. Because they didn't know about electricity, exactly. Even if you had a lamp back then with an electric light bulb, it wouldn't have helped. So Thomas Edison invented those in 1879. So you can imagine if you were in a house that didn't have electric light bulbs in it, it would be pretty dark, wouldn't it? And so what would you do if you had a little lamp like this? Maybe something that's two or three times bigger than this, but the same kind of thing. What would you do with it? Yes, Grayson. You would light it, okay? What would you do, Victoria? You would get lots of them, okay? And you'd use up all your olive oil very quickly. Well, what people would do is they would light it, of course, but then they would put it on a high spot. And that's what our verse talks about. You wouldn't put a bowl over top of it, would you? Yes, Elise. You'd use up all your lights. Okay. So, and that's the way that we're supposed to be. So we are lights for the people around us, aren't we? And we're going to talk about that a little bit this morning. But the important thing is that other people can see that. And we try not to hide it. But we put it on top of if you have a candle, you put it on a candlestick, or you put it on top of a high shelf where it can give light to the whole room. So you can go back to your parents now. So this is a sermon that I preached at Floyd a couple Sundays ago on Light of the World. So I apologize for those who have already listened to this. I thought nobody had. I don't usually like to recycle things, but hopefully it's something that's worth repeating. On August 5th, 2010, a group of men were working inside a copper mine near Copiapó, Chile. 33 of the miners were deep inside the mine, half a mile beneath the surface and nearly 3 miles from the entrance to the mine when there was a collapse in the tunnels leading into the mine. Tons and tons of rock and earth fell into the mine tunnels. Luis Urzúa, the mine supervisor, gathered the men together in a refuge inside the mine, far from the surface, and they waited. And they waited. And they waited. They had hardly any food, only a little liquid. They had enough food to last 2 or 3 days, but through careful rationing, they made it last 2 weeks. They had long periods of darkness as they rationed their meager resources. And the whole time on the surface, crews were trying to drill a hole into where they thought the trapped miners might be. Finally, on the 22nd of August, so this is August 5th to August 22nd, their drill broke through into the refuge where the miners were. When they withdrew the drill, they found a piece of paper attached to the end that said, "Estamos bien en el refugio los 33," which means all 33 of us are well in the refuge. It was a small hole. It wasn't big enough for them to take miners out through it. They could have taken snakes out through it, but not people. And so they had to drill another hole. But it was at least enough that they could start to communicate with the men through it and they could get a little bit of nourishment down through it as well. Over the next 2 months, they worked to dig another shaft, one big enough to have a capsule that could go up and down and get the miners out. On October 13th, they finally got the last man out of the refuge. And on the way up, the men had to wear sunglasses because they had been in darkened circumstances so long that they thought the light, even just the electric lights from around, would damage their eyes if they were exposed to them without some protection. I was thinking about this story and about light and darkness. Isaiah 9, verse 2 says, "The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who dwelt in the land of the shadow of death, upon them a light has shined." You think about this mine disaster and the darkness that those men were facing inside the mine. You think about the boys who were in Thailand in a cave deep inside the earth where they've been trapped by floodwaters. And the first time that they saw scuba men come up through those waters and shone light into their place and brought them light. How much joy must have been in their hearts. And yet there are many people around us who would rather live in darkness. When you walk into a shop or a barn and it's dark and you turn on the light or you shine a light around, sometimes there's things that go scurrying for the corners. The light exposes things that are not the way that they're supposed to be. But the light also makes sure that we don't stumble, doesn't it? So when we think about who is the light of the world, there's probably two ways we could answer it. And we're going to answer it both ways this morning. One way would be to say that Jesus is the light of the world. And we know that song. The whole world was lost in the darkness of sin. The light of the world is Jesus. And that's scriptural. But we are also the light of the world, aren't we? People see our light, or they see the absence of our light, and they say, "Wow." Or they say, "Oh dear." Is that what Christians are? Let's start off thinking a little bit about what Jesus being the light of the world means. We're going to turn to John chapter 1. I'm going to read the first 14 verses here. So it's interesting, the Apostle John begins his gospel talking about this sort of strange aspect of who Jesus was and where he came from. So the other gospel writers started at the beginning, what we would call the beginning. Like if you were writing a biography, you would probably start with the person's birth or maybe even talk a little bit about their family and where they came from. But John goes all the way back to the beginning. John 1, verse 1, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him nothing was made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men." And I want you all to pay attention to the light here. "And the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it." Or some versions would say, "does not overcome it." The light is stronger. "There was a man sent from God whose name was John. This man came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that all through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. That was the true light, which gives light to every man that coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, and the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own did not receive him. But as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God, to those who believe in his name, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth." Sometimes when I read this, it gets a little confusing because you can't figure out which pronouns are referring to Jesus and which pronouns are referring to John the Baptist. But basically, John begins by saying, Jesus is the light that came into the world. We were in darkness and we did not recognize that light when it came into the world, but it was there. And a man named John the Baptist proclaimed the fact that the light was in the world. Have you ever asked yourself if light was the absence of darkness or darkness was the absence of light? Well, you wouldn't have to think very long, would you? Darkness is the absence of light. Light is something. It is photons. It is particles that behave like waves. And physicists could tell you a lot more. If Amy was here this morning, she could tell you what light is, or at least our understanding of it. So if you want to get as dark as you can in your house, and you go into your bedroom, and you shut the blinds, and you close the door, and you turn off the lights, and then you go into your closet, and then you pull the clothes around you, you have darkness, as much darkness as we can have. But if you take a smallest flickering candle in there, you have light. And the darkness cannot overcome that light. And let me say as clearly as I can that you have to work really hard to keep the light out. And some people do exactly that. They like the darkness. The light makes them feel bad about themselves and makes them feel guilty about themselves. And yet, Jesus says, I am the light, and I will not only reveal the things that are wrong with you, I will make you light too. And there's a big difference between us having the light shining on us and feeling uncomfortable and having the light shine through us. And we're going to get to that a little bit later. So it's interesting that John says that the darkness does not understand the light. Some translations say that the darkness does not overcome the light, and of course this is true, but the darkness also hates the light and yet can do nothing to keep it out. I'm going to go over a little bit to John chapter 3 and read a few verses here. So John talks a lot about light, and this is the condemnation, that the light has come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil. For everyone practicing evil hates the light and does not come to the light, lest his deeds should be exposed. But he who does the truth comes to the light, that his deeds may be clearly seen, that they have been done in God. So it's stressful to live in a situation where you are afraid that things that you've done are going to come out. And there's a lot of people who attend church every Sunday, who look good on the outside, who are desperately afraid that the things that they have hidden in the dark are going to have the light shine on them. In the book Star of Light, Patricia St. John tells some of the experiences that she had ministering to people in Morocco as a nurse. And if you all have not read Patricia St. John books, particularly children, I would highly recommend them. They're good books. But in one of the books, I'm going to give this little story away that's in the book, there's a character named Hamid. And Hamid was in the nurse's house, and he took some eggs. And then they went out walking through the muddy streets. And Hamid, this was at night, and it was dark, and the nurse was shining her flashlight so they could see. But Hamid did not want to walk where the light was because he was afraid that the nurse would see the fact that he had stolen these eggs. And so he was walking outside the light as far away from it as he could get. And she couldn't figure out why he was doing this. And then at some point he tripped over something and he went down in the street. And there were broken eggs and blood and just a mess. And she shone her light on him and she could see what he was doing. And she brought him back into her kitchen, and she gave him grace. She cleaned him up, and she gave him some eggs too. And so often we work so hard to keep things out of the light, and yet if we would just bring it into the light, there is grace, there is healing, there is forgiveness, and there is going on. Luke 8, verse 17 says, "For nothing is secret that will not be revealed, nor anything hidden that will not be known and come to light." And for some reason or another, a lot of us believe that things that we do in secret at home can be kept secret from other people. And maybe we're right. Maybe in this life we're right. But there's coming a day when all will be revealed. So much better to bring it out now. So we are the light of the world. There's another song that says, ye are the light of the world, driving the darkness away, shedding his beams on the lost, turning the darkness to day. And I wonder if this song is overselling it just a little bit, because I certainly do not feel like that kind of light. That's Jesus' light. My light is that little flickering candle we were talking about, or maybe my little oil lamp over here. It's just tiny. We'll put it up here so that everybody on the other side can see it too. So a little tiny lamp, maybe half that size. It's the way I feel. Matthew 5, 14 through 16, verses are up on the board here. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. And I think we need to think about what it means that we are the light of the world. It sounds like a big deal, doesn't it? So maybe part of it is just saying that Jesus is not here where people can see him, but people can see us. We are not a huge light, but we are big enough that the people around us will be able to see it. So what is the significance of our life? And I do think that when we act the way that we should, it makes people feel guilty, maybe gets people to change their behavior. So there's two kinds of smart people in this world. There's people who are smart and make you feel dumb, okay? They just, something about their smartness just says, I could never be that smart. You probably talk to some people like this. And then there are smart people that inspire us to be like them. And I think holiness is the same way. Sometimes we are around holy people that we say, I don't care how holy they are, I don't want to be like them. I don't know what it is about their holiness, but it just pushes me away. I could never be as good as them, but I don't really want to be as good as them either. And then on the other side, there's some people who we understand, watching them, listening to them, being around them, that we want to be like them as they are trying to be like Jesus. And maybe it's a difference between who Jesus was, because we know he was perfect, and yet people were drawn to him and how the Pharisees were. The Pharisees were as perfect as people could be, and yet they were as lost as people can be. Our light is revealed through the things we say. It's also revealed through the things we do. These verses come at the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, and Jesus goes on to say that as we put these things into practice that he talked about, that that is the way in which we reveal light to people. Some people think that they can show light by voting for the right candidates, supporting the right people on social media. But I think all that stuff is neither here nor there. It's just not what Jesus was interested in. He wanted us in our interpersonal relationships with other people to show him to them. And the important thing we see at the end there is that God is glorified through the stuff that is said or done. So if somebody sees me doing something and they come away with it saying, you know, that John Waldron is somebody special, that's not light. I don't know what it is, but it's not light. The light points to the source of the light. Sometimes people think about Mennonites as good people, good cooks, good neighbors, and all that's fine. I'd rather that they thought that than they thought that we were terrible neighbors. But they need to see something more. I see people around me who are living in darkness. I was talking to Derek. Derek worked with me a few weeks ago. And I said to Derek, you know, sometimes people that we meet have lives that are just grab bags of chaos. And what I mean by that is it doesn't matter which part of the bag you reach into and you pull something out. It is disaster. And what those people need is to meet Jesus. And maybe they can meet Jesus through us. Maybe they can. Our lights need to be on display. This may be prideful, but it isn't. You all have probably heard the song about the lower lights be burning. And I'd like to just share that with you this morning. All along America's east and west seaboards, the Gulf Shore, and along the Great Lakes region, lighthouses stood on the shore of major harbors. Along with lighthouses, there were also lower lights to guide ships into the harbor. When there were large rocks near the shore, the lower lights helped the pilots to steer clear of them at night. The lower lights were placed along the shore at even intervals. If a ship was coming into the harbor at night, the pilot would see an evenly spaced lower light. If there was a gap in the reflection of the lights, that meant that there was a large rock between the ship and the entrance to the harbor. So people were pretty smart, weren't they? They didn't have GPS, but they could figure out how to get in and out of a harbor at night. The pilots would avoid sailing to these dark areas, knowing that the rocks blocked the lights from showing across the waves. Songwriter Philip Bliss was traveling with famous evangelist D.L. Moody. While preaching, Mr. Moody told this true story. One dark, stormy night on Lake Erie, the winds were howling, the rain was relentless, the waves rolled like mountains, and not a star in the sky could be seen. A ship was rolling with the huge waves and was trying to make its way into Cleveland Harbor. At last, the captain saw the lighthouse for Cleveland Harbor, but he could not see the lower lights. The captain said to the pilot, "Is that Cleveland Harbor?" The pilot responded, "Yes, sir, it is Cleveland Harbor." "Where are the lower lights?" the captain asked. "It must have gone out, sir," said the pilot. "Can you make it into the harbor without the lower lights?" asked the captain. "We must, sir, or we'll perish in this storm," was the pilot's reply. With a strong hand and with a brave heart, the pilot turned the ship's wheel towards Cleveland Harbor. But the ship missed the channel and crashed on the rocks. The boat sank and over 200 people lost their lives. Mr. Moody then made an application from this story. "Brethren, the master will take care of the great lighthouse of salvation, but it is our job to keep the lower lights burning to guide men safely to him." And we need to understand that for many people in this world, we are their only exposure to the light. Ephesians 5, verse 8 says, "In the past you were full of darkness, but now you are full of light in the Lord. So live like children who belong to the light." And Paul says clearly that we were dark in the past. Maybe it's been a long time ago since you felt like you lived in darkness, but there was a time when you were there. And if you've been there, then you can sympathize with people around you who are still living there. But we are full of light now. And if we are full of light, we should live like it. Philippians 2, 14 through 16, we studied this, I think, last Sunday in Sunday school. "Do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless, children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast the word of life, so that I may rejoice in the day of Christ that I have not run in vain or labored in vain." So once again, the Apostle Paul talks about the fact that we are lights. And the interesting thing is, he seems to say that murmuring and complaining and arguing are the opposite of that. And we didn't talk a whole lot about that last Sunday, but at least not in the men's class. But it speaks to me of motivation. We are to behave as though we have the mind of Christ. I don't think we always understand that it's not just what we're doing. We're doing all the right things. We're bringing meals to people who are sick, and we're giving plenty of money in the offering, and we're in church every time the doors are open. And yet, when people see us, they think we are sad. Do they think we're joyful? Well, maybe, but maybe they just can't see anything. I type really hard on keyboards. I'm not sure why. I blame it on the fact that I learned on an old manual typewriter, and you had to hit the keys pretty hard for those. But one day I was typing as one of my patients was talking, and she said to me, "Dr. Waldron, are you mad at me?" And I realized I was just pounding away on the keyboard, and she thought that I was frustrated with her. I said, "No, Mildred, I'm not mad at you. It's just the way I type." I apologize if you thought I was. But it struck me that people pick up on stuff, and the way in which we do it makes all the difference. So what are some obstacles to our light shining? So we think about eclipses, and I know some of you all traveled to see the eclipse. Those from Indiana saw it without traveling, right? So I did not go travel to see the eclipse, so I just was in Brookneal, and it got a little darker than usual. It didn't get all the way dark. But I don't think when we talk about stuff getting in the way, we're talking about a solar eclipse. We're talking about a lunar eclipse, right? Where the Earth's shadow blocks the sun's light from reaching the moon and the moon goes dark. Because the moon has no light of its own, and we don't have light of our own either. We are only reflecting the light that we receive from Jesus. And yet there's things that get in the way, that get in the way of the light of Jesus shining on us that we can then reflect to others. So I'm just going to run through a few different things here. So not investing our time in Bible reading and prayer. Psalm 119 verse 105 says, "Your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path." And I don't want you to come away with the impression that you have to spend 45 minutes every day and that suddenly your light will just shine out. But at the same time, we know Jesus because we spend time with him. And sometimes we don't know Jesus because we don't spend time with him. God needs to feel real for us in order that we can make him real to other people. And God's word is a light to our feet. A lot of times we think about this as just telling us what we're supposed to do. It keeps us on track. But I think it's something more. As we spend time in God's word, we're able to hear his voice speaking to us, and we maintain a connection with him. Desire for approval of others is another thing that can be an obstacle to us shedding light on other people. And I don't know if you all feel like you worry about what other people think of you. I do. When somebody comes to my office and sees me, I know that somewhere between 1 and 2 weeks later, they're going to get a phone call. And they're going to be asked to rate their experience in my office or experience talking to me. And then at the end of the year, my employer is going to tell me, you know, the patients really hate you. And they gave you really bad reviews, and so we're not going to pay you as much next year. Amy has a Rate My Professor rating where students can make comments about how good she's a teacher and give her a rating on that. And she says that she just doesn't pay attention to it, which obviously she's much higher on this not caring about the approval of others than I am. But the reality is that we are not to be focused on what other people think about us, because that is something that can put our light out. I'm going to read some verses from John chapter 12. I'm going to read verses 42 through 49. "Nevertheless, even among the rulers, many believed in him, but because of the Pharisees, they did not confess him, lest they should be put out of the synagogue, for they loved the praise of men more than the praise of God. Then Jesus cried out and said, 'He who believes in me believes not in me, but in him who sent me. And he who sees me sees him who sent me. I have come as a light into the world, that whoever believes in me should not abide in darkness. And if anyone hears my words and does not believe, I do not judge him, for I did not come to judge the world, but to save the world. He who rejects me and does not receive my words has to that which judges him. The word which I have spoken will judge him in the last day. For I have not spoken on my own authority, but the Father who sent me gave me a command that I should say what I should say and what I should speak. And I know that his command is everlasting life. Therefore, whatever I speak, just as the Father has told me, so I speak." So this is a story about people who saw Jesus, heard him, listened to him, believed that he was somebody special, and yet were not willing to follow him. And it's easy to be hard on them. And yet they knew that if they believed Jesus, they couldn't come to church on Sunday. They couldn't go to the temple and offer a sacrifice. They were going to be put out because of that belief. How easy is it to stand up in that kind of a situation? If you knew that taking a stand for what was right meant that you could never come back to church here, and maybe not to any of the churches in the community, would you be willing to do that? So Jesus seems to address this in the verses that follow. He said he was the light, and he said that those who believe on him are believing on not only him, but on the Father. So sometimes we think what we hold in our heart is enough. It doesn't matter so much what we do as long as our heart is right. And maybe that's what James was getting at when he talked about faith and works. It has to come out. So if you go into Chick-fil-A and you ask them for a drink without the cup, they are just going to laugh at you. You can't have the drink without the cup. And yet so many people want to have their faith without their works, and it doesn't work. Fear is another obstacle to us showing light. 1 John 4:17-19, love has been perfected among us in this, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment, because as he is, so are we in the world. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear, because fear involves torment. But he who fears has not been made perfect in love. We love him because he first loves us. And so the antidote for fear is love. Have you ever asked yourself what that means? As I think about what that means, there are situations where people put themselves deliberately in harm's way because they love somebody. I think of a mother seeing her child running out into traffic, and she will run after her child and scoop him up and run back to safety, because she loves him and she doesn't think about her life. And if we love God, we will do whatever it takes to serve him. Another obstacle is that we just think our light is not very bright. And I thought I would read a little bit from a book. This is not a theological book. This is a book called The Little Red Lighthouse and the Great Gray Bridge. And it tells a story about a little red lighthouse that sits at the foot of the Brooklyn Bridge. And it starts before the Brooklyn Bridge was built. And then later on, after the bridge is built, it felt kind of discouraged. So, and I'm going to read through this, and because this is not a scriptural book, but I think it speaks to where we're at. So every day it watched, this is from the lighthouse's perspective, it watched the strange new gray thing beside it grow and grow. Huge towers seemed to touch the sky. Strong loops of steel swept across the river. How big it was, how wonderful, how powerful. A great gray bridge spanning the Hudson River from shore to shore. It made the little red lighthouse feel very, very small. So you see the big bridge and the little tiny lighthouse. Then one night, a great beam of light flashed from the top of the nearest gray tower. Flash, turn, flash. Now I am no longer needed, thought the little red lighthouse. My light is so little, and this one is so big. Perhaps they will give me up. Perhaps they will tear me down. Perhaps they will forget to turn my light on. That night it stood waiting and waiting. It felt glum and anxious. The night grew darker and darker. Why did the man not come? Little red lighthouse could neither speak nor shine. Then in the middle of the night there came a storm. The wind moaned. The waves beat against the shore. It's a little tugboat battling the storm. A thick fog crept over the river and tried to clutch the boats one by one. So this is the fog grabbing the boats. The fat black tug was just coming back from Albany. It was caught and blinded by the fog. It looked for the little red lighthouse, but it could not find it. It listened for the bell, but it could not hear it. So thick the fog was, it could not see the light flashing high up from the great gray bridge. Crash, crash, crash. Fat black tug ran upon the rocks and lay wrecked and broken. Then the great gray bridge called the little red lighthouse. Little brother, where's your light? Am I a brother of yours, bridge? Wondered the lighthouse. Your light was so bright that I thought mine was needed no more. I call to the airplanes, cried the bridge. I flash to the ships of the air, but you are still master of the river. Quick, let your light shine again, each to his own place, little brother. So little red lighthouse trying to shine once more, but though it tried, and it tried, it tried, could not turn itself on. This is the end of me, it thought. This is really the end. My man will not come. Very likely, I shall never shine again. Dark and silent it stood. It was very, very sad. But at last it heard the door opening far below. At last it heard steps hurrying up the stairs. Why, here is the man coming to tend it. Where have you been, man? I thought you were never coming. Oh, those boys, they stole my keys. This will never happen again. Now the little red lighthouse knew that it was needed. The bridge wanted it. The man wanted it. The ships must need it still. It sent out a long, bright, flashing ray out into the night. 1 second on, 2 seconds off. Flash, flash, flash. Look out, danger, it called. Soon its bell was booming out too. So it's the lighthouse shining. Warning, warning, it cried. The little red lighthouse still had work to do, and it was glad. And I like that story, because I feel like that red lighthouse sometimes. There are bigger people with brighter lights that can make so much more impact in this world. And I don't know how you all feel. Do you feel like your light makes a difference? I think if we're honest, every single one of us has felt like that. There are smarter, holier people around us. And yet, those people don't have contact with the people that you have contact with. There are people lost in darkness around us who need a great light. And we are not that light, but we can point to it, can't we? John 21, verses 20 through 23, then Peter, turning around, saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following, who also had leaned on his breast at supper, and said, Lord, is this the one who betrays you? Peter, seeing him, said to Jesus, but Lord, what about this man? Jesus said to him, if I will that he remain till I come, what is that to you? Follow me. And so often we are concerned with how bright our light is and how bright our brother's light is and whether they're shining in the places that they should be shining. And that's what Peter was doing here. He said, you know, John over there, you've come down hard on me here, Jesus. I know I denied you, but John wasn't all that great. What are you going to do with him? How's he going to shine his light? And Jesus said, you shine your light. Follow me. I'd like to read the lyrics to a song that just kind of stood out to me as I was thinking about this. This is by Twyla Paris. And it speaks of the challenge of ministering to people, thinking about what they need to hear and what they need to see from us when they don't know Jesus. He was a friend to sinners. He was a gentle man, beautiful, humble, master plan. His voice could pierce the darkness, quiet and angry sea. I hear him saying, follow me. I look in your eyes and I tell you these things. But somehow I know it's hard to believe. Could you believe if I really was like him, if I lived all the words that I said, if for a change I would kneel down before you and serve you instead? Could you believe? He was a lamb of mercy, undying hope of men, waiting for love to come again. He is the light of heaven, radiant prince of peace. I hear him saying, follow me. I look in your eyes And I tell you these things, but somehow I know that it's hard to believe. Could you believe if I carried my own cross, if I saw that the children were fed, if for a moment I held my opinion and quietly led? Could you believe? Could you believe if I stood here transparent and through me you could look in his eyes? Could you believe if you saw right inside and there was no disguise? Could you believe if I was really like him, if I lived all the words that I said, if it was clear that I held in my heart what I know in my head? Could you believe? And I'm struck by the lyrics of this song, because I think that if I'm honest, so much of my life is about not being transparent with other people. It's not about letting people know that I'm a real person. It's about trying to look holy. And maybe if we could just stand transparent before people and let them understand that we are real people with real struggles, they could see the light shining through in spite of that. Isaiah 49, 5 and 6, and now the Lord says, who formed me from the womb to be his servant, to bring Jacob back to him, so that Israel is gathered to him. For I shall be glorious in the eyes of the Lord, and my God shall be my strength. Indeed, he says, is it too small a thing that you should be my servant, to raise up the tribes of Jacob and to restore the preserved ones of Israel? I will also give you as a light to the Gentiles, that you should be my salvation to the ends of the earth. And this is a beautiful picture of the servant bringing light to two groups of people, the tribes of Israel and also the Gentiles. Have you ever thought that we are at the ends of the earth? The prophets would have had no concept of North America. They didn't know where we were. They didn't know where Gladys was. Gladys didn't exist. They only knew about their small corner of the world. But we are charged with bringing the light to wherever there is darkness. Our candle may just be a tiny flickering flame, but we can still give light to an increasingly darkened world.